Bob will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings,
Oliver. There's always a pecking order. Little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. Today on the show, we have part two of our interview with George Betancourt. We talked to George last week. George was a very, very good teenage bodybuilding champion back in the late 80s, early 90s. And he won the Teenage USA. He also won the Teenage Nationals. George had excellent symmetry. He was only competing as a middleweight, but then he decided to quit the bodybuilding scene at an early age. And that's what we're going to talk about in part two of our interview today. And then George went on to start his own supplement line called Betancourt Nutrition. And it was very, very successful. So I asked him a lot of questions about that, how he got started on that and what his goal was in starting the nutrition line. So it's a very interesting interview with George Betancourt, and we will have that in a second. Before we get to that, I want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. So I was going to ask what is going on, but we all know what is going on with this coronavirus. It has just thrown everything out of whack in this last week. Major, major epidemic, or pandemic, I think they're calling it. It has been one crazy week, that's for sure. I had my birthday this last week on Tuesday, March 10th, and it seems like after that, everything started going crazy with this coronavirus. They are canceling events all over. I just heard today that the Arnold Classic Australia was canceled, and I'm sure the Arnold Classic Brazil is also going to be canceled. So it is just going crazy, and everybody is staying inside. A lot of people aren't working out. I've still been working out. I've still been going to work, and just keeping my fingers crossed. It seems like we're learning more and more about this virus every day, so it's just been crazy, but I've just been trying to stay calm. I'm not freaking out, not going to the grocery store and buying up all the toilet paper like everybody else is. Yeah, I think that's the best thing you can do. Just stay stress-free and try to keep your immune system really strong, which as bodybuilders, most of us have very strong immune systems. And I think that's all you can do. And then just try to stay away, of course, from people who are sick or from large groups of people, I guess. And that's all we can do. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks. Seems like a lot of the schools and businesses and all these events are being shut down till the end of March. So I wonder if they'll have it more contained by then, which is in only, probably another week and a half. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, my birthday was, it was okay. No big deal. I didn't do anything. It was on a Tuesday. My friend Jerome was promoted to sergeant's position at the Tampa Police Force, and he's been trying to get that for years. So he had a ceremony for him at the convention center in Tampa. And then he had a little party, just a dinner at the Columbia restaurant, which is real famous in Ybor City in Tampa. So that's all I did. I didn't really celebrate, unfortunately, but birthdays I don't really celebrate much anymore as I get older. Seems like they're not that big of a deal. So that was it. But I did have a book special on my Facebook page. So if you follow me on Facebook, I was offering my two best-selling books, which is Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1 and also the MP6 Workout. Those books are both about $20 each. I was offering both of them for only $25. So actually, if you're hearing this podcast and you want to go over to my website, which is johnhansenfitness.com, I still have the deal up there. If you want to take advantage of it, it'll probably be up there for a few more days. So Check out johnhansonfitness.com if you want to get both of those books for only $25, which is basically like one book free. And speaking of one thing free, I've got my seminar coming up this weekend. I still am going to do it despite this scare of this coronavirus. We don't have a lot of people. We had one guy coming from Colorado who had to cancel because he didn't want to fly. So I understand that. But we do have some people from Florida coming, and I still have the 2-for-1 deal going, and we still have room. So if you are listening to this podcast and you are in the Florida area, or if you want to drive to Tampa, wherever you're from, it will be this Saturday and Sunday, and that will be March 21st and 22nd, and it is going to be a full-day seminar. We will start at 8 in the morning, and we will teach until 3 in the afternoon. And then we will go to lunch at the gym. They have a supplement snack store. They have some good healthy food there, so we're going to have lunch there, and then we're going to work out afterwards, and I'm going to show how to do all the best effective exercises, and I'm going to demonstrate them all for everybody in the seminar. So it's going to be a really, really good seminar. It's the first time I'm doing a 2-day seminar, so I'm sort of excited by it. I'm writing out a manual, and I will give everybody who goes to the seminar this manual so they'll be able to follow along, and it will have all the information that's in the seminar in this manual. So I'm going to do some more in the future, but if you want to go to this one on the 21st and 22nd, which will be next Saturday and Sunday, just go to my website, johnhansonfitness.com, and you can sign up there. And as I said, I have the 2-for-1 special going, so you can bring whoever you want to bring. And that's half price, really, if you guys split the price of the seminar. So very, very good deal. And after we are done with our interview with George, I found some old muscular development magazines. These were from 1989, 1990, and I found a really good one with Mike Quinn on the cover. And he's got a really good interview. If you remember Mike Quinn back in the 80s and 90s, he was always like the best interview for the magazines because he had the greatest personality, didn't hold anything back, was totally honest. And so this is, I think, part one of a 2-part interview. So I was looking through some old ones. They had an interview with Rich Gaspari, Lee Labrada, Corey Everson, but I decided to read this one. So we will read this one, or I will read this one, I should say, after the George Betancourt interview is finished. All right, before we get to that, I want to read some emails I got. I got one email by email. Her name is Anna Lee. And if you guys want to email me on anything, just go to naturalolympia@gmail.com and you can email me about anything that's on your mind. And this one said, "Dear John, thank you very much for your podcast. I was never interested particularly in bodybuilding, and I found the podcast by accident. The in-depth knowledge you have and your skillful interviewing techniques, plus allowing your guests to tell their stories, makes it a gem. I hope you will have another conference with training again. I wanted to go, but I was unable to arrange it at work. I started working out later in life. I still have a full-time job, so not that much time, but I am consistent. I'm lifting weights, and I was surprised by the results. Now, I know I could get much better, stronger, and more fit, and I would really love to take your seminar, although I am far from in the category of people who enter competitions. I would just like to take it for my own knowledge to help me progress. Sincerely, Anna Lee." All right, Anna. Well, hopefully you can make it to another seminar in the future. And as I mentioned before, I'm going to try and have these all over the country if I can. I was talking to someone from Chicago, my hometown, and I might try and get out there and have one. But we'll see what happens with this coronavirus and how that's affecting everything. On my Facebook page for the George Betancourt interview from last week, Lydia Tack. Now, Lydia used to be married to Zabo Kwazuski, and Lydia was in quite a few ads for Weider with Arnold. Very, very beautiful lady. And she is still on Facebook, so I still see her comments every once in a while. She is remarried, of course, as Zabel passed away quite a few years ago. And Lydia said, "Amazing development. He must have started weight training in junior high like Zabel. Bravo." And George answered Lydia, and he said, "Thanks for the kind words. Yes, I began in eighth grade." And Lydia responded, "Such dedication at a young age. What influenced you?" Zabel started young because he was trying to heal a hernia, and he kept it up in high school because he got into football, swimming, and track. Samir Banut, 1983 Mr. Olympia, said, "Now that's a beautiful old-school body." And George Betancourt said, "Samir Banut, thanks. I remember having a picture of you on my wall when I was a kid." And Samir said, "George, you look like a Greek god, my friend. Just awesome." And George said, "Samir, thank you, sir. That's what we all tried to achieve when we were kids. To me, you guys from the 80s were my Greek gods. And that's what I tried to emulate. Today, I do not think I would try to emulate anyone that's out there. They are all way too bloated for me." And Angel Olivia said, incredible symmetry, super small waist, another Cuban bodybuilder. That's all we had for the emails and or the mentions on Facebook. Speaking of Cuban bodybuilders, I did get the chance to check out YouTube this week, and they got some stuff from the Arnold Seminar on Sunday that always takes place the day after the Arnold Classic. So that was like a go. So check that out if you get a chance. Arnold talks a lot about Franco, and he also talks a lot about training with Sergio back in 1969. It's real classic stuff. So I think it was Muscular Development that had it. So check out Muscular Development's YouTube channel and check out the Sunday seminar. It was really, really good stuff. All right, before we get to our second part of our interview with George Betancourt, I also want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And tell them that you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with George Betancourt, part two of our interview, where we talked to George about retiring from competition and then how he got into his own business, which was Betancourt Nutrition. Here we go. Thinking about being a pro or anything like Sean Ray or Eddie Robinson?
John, I had set some goals that by the age of 21, if I wasn't making money out of bodybuilding, I was going to get out. I don't think my goal, my real goal was to be the youngest pro.
Okay.
Right? Besides maybe Tyshawn Ray's record. Not Ty Shane DeMora, because that was, you know, that wasn't going to happen. I wanted to Tyshawn Ray's record and beat it by 20. What happened was, at 20, I was training, and a lot of people don't know this. I was training, and at this point, I was already like a young adult, and I had all the pieces put together.
Okay.
I was training that year for the USA's, and I was going to compete against Dennis Newman, right? That year, Dennis didn't win. I think Bo Matlock won.
Okay.
Bo Matlock won? I don't know who won. I don't know who, so let me not, don't take my word for that.
What year was it? What year was it, Jordan?
So I won the team years in 91. 92 must have been.
92 was Flex Wheeler.
Okay, all I wanted to do, I don't know if it was Flex Wheeler or not. All I wanted to do was beat Dennis Newman.
Okay.
And that was just my goal, you know, because he beat me. You know, you're a competitor.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
You're a bull, you know. You're an animal, man. When you come when you're in any sport, you might not show it, but you're thinking about how the heck do you beat someone? You know, if I die, I die, but I'm gonna beat this dude.
Right.
And that's what you do. You're a competitor.
Right.
You know? So I'm training for the USA's, and I have all the pieces put together. Finally, you know, I'm a young kid, young adult. And I'm looking better than ever, and I'm dieting for the show, and I'm looking freaking better than ever. And I tore a pec.
No way. Really? Oh, man.
I got a light partial tear on a pec.
Doing bench presses?
Yeah, like everyone.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? Okay. I go, and I get operated. Came out perfect. Actually, that year my goal wasn't to train Dennis. I mean, wasn't to beat Dennis Newman. That year was just to compete in the USA.
Okay.
I got out. Obviously, Dennis Newman was in the back of my head. I got operated, and I told myself, okay, I'm 20. I could still do this goal of tying Sean Ray. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm gonna train for the next year's USA. Now I'm training. I got 2 years I haven't competed. I'm training for the USA, and I'm putting all the pieces together. This photographer from California flies down to shoot me. He sees Dennis Newman, who's training for the USA, and he tells me, he goes, I was just with Dennis Newman. I shot him last week. You're going to beat him.
Wow. I'm sure.
Yeah. Would it have happened? I don't know. My whole goal was to beat Dennis Newman now,
right,
you know?
Right.
I want the revenge. This is what you do, you know? You compete. Right. It's the best thing. Dennis Newman was not thinking of me, trust me, because he was in another class. He was not thinking of me, not dreaming, nothing. But that was my revenge. And what happens is Hurricane Andrew comes.
Oh, yeah.
And that was my last year, man.
Oh, no shit.
I set a goal. My goal was to get it out by the age of 21.
Wow.
So Hurricane Andrew came. And we couldn't train anymore. The gym got blown away.
No way. Got blown away. No shit.
Well, the roof came off. The other gym got torn apart. The Porky's over there. All the windows came down. The shopping center. You know, Miami got destroyed. You know?
Oh, shit.
There were other things to do at that time.
Yeah.
Besides Spain.
Right, right. Oh, man.
Believe it or not. I went to the gym the day after the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
I knock on the window, on the glass window, and I see the owner on the phone. He must have been calling the insurance company. I don't know. I'm sure that's who he was calling.
Right.
And when I look up the door of the glass, the roof is missing. And I'm like, can I train? And he's looking at me like, what the fuck? But they loved me, man, because I was like a star, you know? They loved me. He goes, George, you could train, but don't train underneath the hole. So he opens the door. He lets me in, closes the gym just for me so I could get my workout in.
Wow.
And I trained for maybe 5 days after the hurricane like that.
Hmm.
And then I just stopped one day in the middle of the gym and I questioned myself and I go, what the fuck am I doing?
Hmm.
What am I doing? You know, there's no rooftop here. You know, because I hadn't gotten out of that zone yet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm still moving forward, you know, you're in that zone.
How far away was the contest at that point?
I think it was 5 weeks.
Hmm.
5 or 6 weeks.
So you just decided that's it, I'm done.
That's it, man. I was burned out, though, John.
Yeah.
I think the worst thing that ever happened to me was that I never lost as a teenager.
Yeah.
And not losing was not good.
Hmm.
Because it built a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I imagine.
You understand? And then everybody pumping you up. Oh, you're going to be the greatest. You're going to be the best. You're going to be the best. And after a while, you start believing it, you know?
Right, right.
And then what happens is, I started realizing that I'm living for other people now.
Yeah.
Like I have to be up here for everyone else, you know? Like, you know, before I was doing it for me.
Right.
You know, it was all me. I love this stuff. Me. But now the expectations are up here. I don't have anybody coaching me, like telling me, George, you don't have to do this for no one. You do it for yourself. Calm down, relax, take a week off, go on vacation, do this. I have nobody guiding me.
Hmm.
Now it was like, I don't know, man. It was a time bomb, man, that just needed to happen.
Yeah.
You know? Hmm. It was a time bomb, though.
So what did you decide to do then, George?
Well, I completely quit that day. I stopped in the middle of the gym. I looked around. There was like no roof. And I just like had like a wake-up call. I was like, what the heck am I doing?
Wow.
And then a lot of my friends had gotten married. They had houses. And I'm like, dude, I just put all these years into this. I have nothing.
Yeah.
I'm living with my mom.
Yeah.
You know? What am I going to do? You know? I didn't want to take drugs for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know? I didn't want to travel the world in a bikini. And I don't know why. It wasn't for me. Like, you know, right. Like I didn't want men, like other men admiring me in a bikini. Like I saw that kind of weird.
Yeah.
I got out and I had a little bit of money saved and I went and I opened up a gym.
Oh, really? Okay. Where at? In Miami?
In Coral Gables.
Okay.
And we paid it off in 3 months. I was
wow.
My first business, I paid it off in me and my partner. In 3 months, we paid it off.
Paid off all the equipment and everything? Okay.
Yeah. It was an instant hit.
Man, really? No shit. Was that because a lot of the other gyms got destroyed in Hurricane Andrew?
No. Well, this was like 2 years after I stopped.
Oh, okay.
Competing. After I stopped competing, I needed to find myself.
Right.
So it happened for 2 or 3 years. I began going out with Frankie Sahim and my friends. They were older. I hadn't been to clubs. I hadn't partied.
Okay.
I hadn't done it.
Lived it up a little bit now.
Yeah. And here I am. I'm this young, you know, good-looking kid, tan, with tremendous physique.
Yeah.
Now I'm putting my physique out there for the girls, you know?
Right.
I didn't do none of that before.
Right.
You know? So now, but it was a weird time for myself because I had this physique, you know, here I am sleeping around with half of Miami.
Yeah.
But I wasn't happy because I had left something that I loved, you know. I'm like, yeah. I was empty inside. I'm like, man, this bodybuilding stuff, it's eating me up, you know.
Yeah.
But I couldn't go back to it because I needed to become a man. I needed to grow up, you know.
Right.
So I opened up the gym and did that for 7 years. And it was time. It was a weird time in my life. I needed to find myself. I was like one of those teenage stars, like, you know, like they grow up as a teenager in the movies, yeah. And then they get out and they get burned out.
Right.
That's what happened.
Get in trouble. Yeah.
Right. I never got in trouble. I just did the girl thing and all that, going out.
Yeah.
But I never stopped training.
Okay.
I just stopped training competitively.
Yeah.
Because training was always in my heart, and I knew that my training and my physique was going to get me to my second stage in my life.
Okay.
I knew it was going to get me somewhere else.
So how long did you guys own the gym then?
Well, with him, I owned it for about a year and a half.
Okay.
And then we got in a scuffle, and he went his way. He opened up another one like 2 blocks down the street from me.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he did great, you know? And I kept on with mine, then I moved from that location to a different location.
Okay.
And I did that, then I saw everybody's career take off. Dennis Newman, Flex yeah. Wheeler.
Yeah.
Kevin LeBron.
Yeah.
Saw Sean Ray continue with his success. I saw Lee Haney retire.
Right.
I saw everybody that I competed with that were teenage champions become stars, you know. It was right. Like, man, I could have been one of those, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, you know, I missed it. I missed it during all that time.
Hmm.
So, you know, I had the gym and I had that for 7 years.
You never thought about going back, George, to competing?
What's that?
You never thought about going back at that point?
Oh, I did a comeback. I did a comeback after 12 years, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I made a comeback after 12 years. I came back and I competed in the USA's.
How old were you then?
32.
Oh, okay.
I always knew in my heart that once I got my life together, that I was still young enough.
Yeah.
That if I wanted to come back, I could always come back. So I kept that peace in here.
Right.
I always kept training. I wasn't sure that I was going to. But I always knew that I'm such a young kid.
Yeah.
That if I wanted to, later on in my life, I could always come back. And I came back.
Hmm. How'd you do?
Not too. I mean, I did great, but I could have done better. After 12 years of not competing, I came back in the USA and I placed fifth or fourth.
Okay.
In the USA.
Top five.
What's that?
Top five.
Yeah. Yeah. There was an error where I had been out for so many years where I met one of these guys that came to my gym, uh-huh. who kind of admired me when I was a kid. And he came to my gym. He goes, George, you coming back? You can't come back. You got to put on a lot of muscle mass. And things have changed. Things are completely different now. No, you can't do what you used to do when you were a teenager. That stuff won't work today. And that was my I knew that I had to do exactly the same thing that I just did 12 years earlier.
Yeah.
But somehow this guy put this seed in my head that things change, that I had to do things a little bit different because times have changed.
Right.
So he convinced me to do things differently when I have never in my life listened to anyone about training or dieting. I always did everything myself.
Yeah.
And this guy planted the seed in my head. George, you're not going to do good. This is a different era. This is a different time.
Right.
So I did all this crazy stuff that this guy convinced me that this is the new stuff that you need to do, because we're talking about 12, almost 13 years later.
Yeah.
And I get fifth. And as soon as I hadn't talked to anyone in the industry for 12 years, as soon as I walk off the stage, Jake Cutler is there. I hadn't seen him in 12, 13 years. As soon as I walked off the stage, he comes to congratulate me. He goes, George, you look great. I go, man, I could have done better. He goes, just keep doing what you used to do. Nothing's changed. And I'm like,
oh, that's funny.
Man, I walk to my room or to my girlfriend, and I'm like, man, this is all bullshit, man. This is just tuna and rice and potatoes, man. You know, there's nothing else to this, man.
Right.
You know, chicken, potato, and tuna, and fish, and eggs, you know, and oatmeal for breakfast.
Right.
And I'm like, I wanted to kill myself because I had trained so hard after 12 years, and I wanted to show up and make such a good impact. Like, I literally wanted to win.
Yeah, sure.
I thought that I could win, you know? I literally thought that I could win. And if not win, definitely second or third.
Yeah.
And as soon as I get up to, I didn't talk to Jake. As a matter of fact, I was surprised that he came up to me and shook my hand because I hadn't talked to him in 12, 13 years.
Yeah.
And as teenagers, we were friends because I was a little bit older than him. He was younger than me.
Okay.
But he knew me. He had recognized me. So he came, he approached me, and I was like, wow, Jake Cutler is shaking my hand. George, nothing's changed. Keep everything the same. And I'm like, listen, when you train for a show and you put in this effort and you do these dumb things and you're like, you want to kiss, and it costs money to compete, you know? And I hate to lose money.
Right.
You know? So I'm like, dude, I just lost, you know, 14 weeks, a whole year of training, my medication, and time with my wife and the kids.
Right.
You know, I'm like, dude, I can't do this forever, you know?
Yeah. So that was it? It was just that one show and it was it?
I beat it two more times, I think, after that.
Okay.
Then the next year I got fourth, and then on the USA, I think. Like, again, I'm going. And then I competed a third time, but then I went from the USA to the Nationals. And then by that time, I was just killing myself with pressure, and I think I got sixth.
Okay.
And I said, you know what? I'm done, man.
Was the competition different?
Well, now I was dealing with the adults, you know?
Yeah.
Dealing with adults.
Right.
But that first year that I competed, I believe I could have gotten two.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or first, second. No, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know who won first place. I could have gotten second or something.
Were the guys bigger, more harder? I mean, what were the judging standards different 10 years later?
No, I got what I deserved. It's just I did things wrong because it's maniac put this super seed on my head, you know?
Right.
No, I was competing with adults, you know, muscular. And I was competing with the best of the best. It wasn't like when I was competing at the Southern States.
Yeah.
The Southern States were the best of the best.
Yeah.
Now you're competing with the best of the best.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's a different level.
Yeah.
But I also did a job because I was launching Betancourt Nutrition at that time.
Okay. Where'd you get the idea for that?
Well, when I was a kid, I was lost in the sense of I did not know how to make money out of bodybuilding.
Okay.
And I used to see the stars on the products, you know, the bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to see my face on a product as a teenager.
Okay.
You know, but I didn't live in California, you know. Ed from California wanted to fly me over there to live over there, but I was I'm 19, but I was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to put me in Gold's Gym to work, but I probably wouldn't have held a job, you know. I was so focused on bodybuilding, I would have moved over there for a month and he would have fired me, you know. So I didn't move. So as a teenager, when I was 19, a company from down here, I don't recall the name right now, which is still around today, 25, 30 years later, called me to be on their ads.
Okay.
But when they called me, I was a teenager. When they called me, and again, Perrigo had put me in the cover of his magazine for his products. And when they called me, they wanted to – so I asked them, how much was the pay? And they tell me $500. I'm like, $500? Okay, I'll call you back. I'm like, I'm not doing anything for $500, you know?
Right.
But that always stayed in my mind, is the fact that somebody called me to put me in the products. So as I got older, I was still training. I had the gym. I told myself I wanted to make a product line, but I didn't know how. And I always told myself, if somebody called me to put me in the products, that means I'm good enough to do this on my own.
Okay.
Like, that was my thinking, you know? If they want to put me in the product, that means I'm good enough to do this on my own.
Yeah.
Do you and remember? I don't like to work for anyone.
Right.
I don't like to work for anyone.
Right, right.
So, sure enough, I was in my seventh year of owning the gym. I was burned out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I hate training people.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was a slave to them.
Yeah.
I'm here training, you know, these rich people.
Yeah.
I'm here picking up the weights for them. I hated that stuff. And the last thing I wanted to do was to be a bodybuilder training people.
Right.
And I was getting burned out with that stuff. I hated it from day one, but we made money.
Okay.
I met a gentleman that I hadn't seen in 12 years. And he had launched a product line overseas. Apparently his product line, the economy had dropped and he had lost his brand. I didn't know that. And this guy was very shady.
Hmm.
So I saw him at the Southern States 1 year. He told me, George, hey man, you know, I moved back here. I had this product line over there and it was doing fantastic. And I was like, oh wow, you have a product line. He goes, yeah, we did fantastic. I have a catalog. He showed me the catalog. He goes, you want to do a product with me? And I'm like, well, why don't we become partners? So I had saved some money. Apparently, during that time, with the gym, I was always good at saving money. My brother always taught me to save your pennies.
Okay.
And we launched our product together, 50-50. I put the money, and that was shady. I put the money, and we put the brand. We created a company. Like a second company, like his company, and then this new company was under his umbrella. And the deal was I was going to put the money, and he was going to teach me how to make products, you know, how to make.
Okay.
So, but after we made the first product, a month later, I'm asking him, hey, teach me, you know, like, where are you making this stuff? He doesn't want to teach me where he's making the product. And a red flag just went off. I'm like, oh, man, this guy's doing something shady.
Yeah.
You know? So we split up. I got an attorney. I ended up chasing him around all over Miami. He left. He went back to his country. Somehow, some way, I was able to find a manufacturer that was making the product. I'm the one who had the money at the time. Not a lot of money, but I had the money. And I ended up creating Ben & Core Nutrition after that.
Okay.
And sure enough, like I had said earlier, there was a second chapter in my life. I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was going to be with this fitness industry.
Right.
Because I was in love. You know, not competing had a hole in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Being out of it also had a hole, you know, there was a hole in my heart.
Yeah.
So in order for me to fill that gap, I needed to stay involved in this industry somehow. And it was through selling supplements.
Okay.
And then that made me feel like a bodybuilder again.
And what year was it? What year was that, George?
What's that?
What year was that when you started that?
2002 or 2003.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then the cool thing about the brand was that when I started traveling the country, now I'm seeing all these kids that I used to compete with at the trade shows.
Mm.
And they're older. and I hadn't spoken to them in 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
So now I'm back in the industry, and I'm seeing these guys, and we're hugging, and we're like, you know, I'm traveling from state to state.
Yeah.
And now I'm friends with all these kids that I made friends with as a teenager, man. It was so beautiful, man.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful thing, man, you know, like to travel and then to see, because as a teenager, I didn't get to travel to the expos.
Yeah.
It was just compete and go home.
Right.
You know? Now, when I'm traveling the expos, I'm seeing all the guys that were in the magazines that I used to admire.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I used to admire all these people that were stars, you know, Flex Wheeler, Sean Ray, Kevin LeBron, Labrada,
right.
Haney. But now these guys recognize me.
Hmm.
And I'm, holy crap, they recognize me.
Yeah.
You know, like my first experience, I went to California one day. I didn't think anybody was going to recognize me. I went there for business. I was a businessman.
Yeah.
I wasn't there to meet people. I was there to make money somehow.
Yeah.
I didn't keep my company going. And I go to the trade show, and I was like a star. The bodybuilders are saying hi to me like I'm a star. Like,
yeah.
Like, hey, yeah. George. Like if they just knew me. Like if they've known me for 15 years.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, my God, I just shook hands with Labrada.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I just shook hands with Gasparri. Oh, my God, Lee Haney put his arm around me. I was at a show. I wasn't even paying attention. My idol was Lee Haney.
Mm-hmm.
I idolized Lee Haney. To me, Lee Haney was God.
Yeah.
I was at a trade show here in Miami, and Lee Haney taps me in the shoulder. I didn't even turn around. He goes, hey, George. I didn't even know it was Lee Haney. God, that wasn't Lee Haney. I go to my employee after he leaves. I didn't even say hi to him because I didn't even know it was him.
Yeah, right.
Because I guess everybody knows each other because from the magazines, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I go and I leave and I go to Joaquin, one of my employees, one of my sales guys, and I go, dude, you know who just put his arm, who just tapped me in my shoulder? Who? I go, Lee Haney, and he doesn't care. And yeah. I'm like, dude, you don't understand. I'm not watching my shirt for the next 6 years, dude. Dude, that's, you don't understand, dude. I'm not seeing this shirt, man. Yeah. You don't understand, man. I'm putting this shirt up on the wall, man. He touched me. He touched me in the shoulder, man.
But that's the great thing about bodybuilding is we never forget the champions, you know. So 20 years later, we still remember those guys, you know.
Yeah, man. And he tapped me in the shoulder. And to me, man, to me, that meant the whole world, man. To me, that was like, to me, that I don't know, man. I think that's all I needed, man, was to, like, you know, like, okay, you know, I'm one of these dudes, you know.
Right. You're one of the group, right.
Yeah, like, you know, and then, you know, I got to meet Flex and, you know, and
right.
Sean Ray ended up working for me for a while.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah, Sean Ray ended up working for me. What's this guy, the spokesperson for the IMDb?
Bob Chicarillo.
He ended up working for me, too.
Yeah.
I ended up becoming friends with all of them.
Wow.
And we are friends, and it's no big deal because you read about each other in the magazines, and then when you see each other in person, it's like, oh, that's the dude I've been reading about it.
Yeah.
But to me, remember, these guys are older, so when I used to admire them like God, you know,
right.
To be like them, you know, I wanted to be like them. So then when they recognize me now as an adult, I just feel like, what's the word, vindicated, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Yeah.
Vindicated, you know. I feel like, okay, I didn't become a pro. I got out too early. That was, unfortunately, that was my plan.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm okay with that plan because my life turned out to be okay. I wanted to be a businessman. My goal was to be a businessman.
Right, right.
That was always my goal. My goal was to create a name for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like Arnold did. To then use that name to use it for something else. And I knew business was always in the back of my head.
Mm.
I had my first business when I was 18 years old.
What was that?
I had money saved, and I gave it to my dad and my car. My dad used to buy cars, used cars, and sell them. And then we used to split the profit. I did my first workout video when I was 19 years old. I did that with my own money.
Wow, no kidding.
And I got the money from personal training.
So what was the reason for the success of Betancourt Nutrition, George? Because I know a lot of bodybuilders, they want to start their own supplement line, and a lot of them don't make it. It's probably harder now today in, you know, 2020 than it was back in 2003. But what was the reason that you were able to make that successful?
John, I started the company with my wife. And I think there was a lot of luck, a lot of pieces landed correctly. I didn't have money, you know. Like I told you the day, a lot of people think that I came from money and didn't. You know, I saw my parents lose everything, their home, when they were 18 years old. Literally, like, they lost their home. I think I started the company by myself. I had the gym. I sold my house. I got some money from the house. I reinvested it. I put that into the product line.
Okay.
It was a time where there was a little bit less competition in the supplement. Actually, a lot less competition in the supplement industry. I had gone struggling from store to store across the country. I would get in a plane, rent a car, and go from store to store. Okay. And I was so damn focused, because bodybuilding taught me to be focused, that I wasn't going to leave an account without closing that account. I was going to sell product to whoever it was. Whether I got to give you the product for free and then you pay me later, I was going to gain that account.
Yeah.
What happened was, I had gone across the country everywhere, and it wasn't easy. I was getting a lot of accounts, but the economy fell apart. That was in 2006, 2007. At that time, I was doing close to like $1 million in sales. I had been in business 3 years.
Okay.
My goal after 3 years was to get a line of credit to help fund the business. When I went to get a line of credit is when the banks were closing. So I wasn't able to get a line of credit.
Right.
At that time, I had given away 20, 15. I started with 15, then another 10% or 5%. I had given a percentage of my company to the manufacturer. I had moved my warehouse next to the manufacturing plant.
Okay.
I had given him a piece of the company, so he, in return, I could get cheaper prices.
Okay.
When the economy fell, he merged his company. He got a capital investment firm to invest in the manufacturing plant. It was a guy from down here, a billionaire, who owns the Navajo supermarkets. No, not about Navajos. It's a guy who's a billionaire who gets businesses and he grows them and flips them. That's okay. What capital investment firms do.
Okay.
They lend you money, grow a company, and they lend you the money with the hopes that you could grow the company to a certain point and then sell them. That's what they do. They sell it at a high. They don't wait for this. They wait to sell.
Yep. Okay.
So my partner Anthony gets his capital investment firm to invest into his manufacturing plant, and that man wanted to invest in my company too. And Anthony, which was my partner, convinced him that this is the right brand.
Okay.
So they provided us with a loan. And then I had this great man named Dan, who used to work at GNC. He knew how to put companies together, how to manage people. That was his expertise, you know, how to manage people. He could have 500 employees, and he knows how to manage them all.
Okay.
Yeah. I was more of the being outside, going to the stores, shaking hands.
Right.
And getting – I love that part, you know.
Okay.
So what we did was, Dan was running the manufacturing inside, and a lot of the people, a lot of the office stuff, while I, with the name, had to focus on getting accounts.
Okay.
When we got the money, it just happens to be that it was at a perfect time. I had already laid down the foundation for Betancourt. It wasn't done on purpose. But the foundation was there. I had already traveled the country.
Yeah.
I had accounts everywhere.
Okay.
So when we got the money, I had the knowledge already of what to do. I just never had the money to do it. And I had the knowledge because other people and other brands had, throughout those years, provided me with the knowledge of, George, this is what you need to do. You need to hire field reps. You need to hire demo people. You need to, you know, distribute here. This is how you distribute products. This is how you launch products.
Okay.
So with all that knowledge that I had for the previous 3 years, when I got the capital investment, I was able to put the money to work. You know, we were able to hire field reps and start advertising little by little. We didn't go crazy with the advertisement, but we were able to run, you know, better ads. Uh-huh. I got a graphic designer. I think the graphic designer was the most important thing.
Huh. Okay.
To have one in-house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to have one in-house. Because before, I would have to outsource a graphic designer.
Oh,
once
okay.
we got the graphic design, I think that's the first thing I did. I was convinced to have a graphic and inside graphic designer.
Okay.
Things just started rapidly evolving, you know, and I really knew where to put the pieces, and then Dan just managed everything from the inside,
okay.
And we just started growing, and then the goal was to grow to then sell it.
Okay.
That was cool.
And then when did you sell it?
I sold it in 2015.
Okay, 5 years ago. Okay, cool.
Yeah, 2015. Yeah. 2015. Vitamin Shop.
So to Vitamin Shop, okay.
Vitamin Shop came and bought us out. They bought the manufacturing plant and they bought Better Nutrition.
Okay, great.
Crazy.
So are you basically retired now then, George?
I was retired for a while, and I don't say like retire, but not enough duties during my day.
Yeah.
I will call it retirement, you know, I guess. I guess having enough money in the bank is what you consider retirement.
Yeah.
I think we spoke about this, I don't like not having anything to do.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Maybe for a while. You know, I think when Medical Nutrition, when I sold it, I was up here, and the stress level was crazy.
Yeah.
But when you get out, if you don't have a plan and you have nothing to do, yeah, that's cool for a little while. Everybody needs a break.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a second plan, you start going nuts.
Right.
After a while.
Yeah.
And that literally happened to me.
Hmm.
I had a non-compete for a few years there where I couldn't work in the industry.
Yeah.
And then, like I told you, I had a slip and fall here in my house. Step hit me in the back and I broke my back. I had to go through a few operations.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay. And then I during those years where I had a non-compete, the money that I got from the business, from the sale, I reinvested it, everything into real estate.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah. So believe it or not, this man right here, did it somehow.
Yeah, you did. And it's cool too how you sort of had
crazy,
that.
Man? Is that crazy?
Yeah, it is. But it's cool too how you had that goal in mind from when you were like in fifth grade and coming back from the principal's office.
Is that crazy, man, from a kid that went from getting F's?
Yeah, that's amazing. But you always had that business mindset. I think you always knew that you were going to get into business, even when you were competing in bodybuilding. You always knew that was coming.
Is that crazy, man? I literally, let me tell you, had we kept the business longer, I would have had 10 times more money than what I have now.
Yeah.
But we sold because we had obligations and we had the capital investment firm. But my company could have been as big as Gasparri's.
Yeah.
In the Brock, easily.
Yeah.
But we had obligations because that was the plan to sell.
Right.
But this young man here, somehow, don't ask me how, I was able to escape.
Yeah.
And at 46 years old,
wow.
I was sitting in my living room saying, what the heck did I just do? It was the same questions that I was asking myself when I got out of bodybuilding. When I got out of bodybuilding, right? I was focused for so many years. I had no clue what I had accomplished. You know, when you're in that zone,
yeah,
it's just you're competing and you're winning because this is what you want to do. You're not doing it for anyone. But when you get out of that sport, that you're in that tunnel vision zone, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, when you get out, and it happened to Sean Ray because he told me the other day, it happens to everyone. When you get out and you realize, it's when you realize, oh my God, what the heck did I just do? And it happened to me with bodybuilding. When I get out, I look back, I go, oh my God, I won the Teen USA, I won the Teen Nationals, I never lost a show
yeah.
as a teenager, I won the Southern States as a teenager. I was like, wow, I did all of that. Well, the same thing happened to me with the business. When I got out at 46, out of the industry, I was like, what the heck did I just do? You know?
Yeah.
And I still question myself. You know, that's gone down now. Like, now I feel normal.
Yeah.
But I question myself. I'm like, you know, like what did I, you know, what happened to me? How did I get here?
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome, but it's weird, you know? It's like, you know, this young... I guess when you have a dream, man, I don't know, man. You have a dream, you just keep chipping at it little by little.
But it also sounds like you applied the same principles of bodybuilding to business. The focus, the determination, the goals, all that, right?
Well, absolutely. The business was do or die, man.
Yeah.
The business was do or die, and I got lucky too in there, man. I met this nice man named Dan.
Yeah. He had a good partner.
I think deep down inside, he liked who I was as a bodybuilder, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
And he took an interest in me. And I think he helped me out with the company. And he was able to manage other things that I couldn't do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's I guess in every business you need partners like that. You know, you take care of this, you take care of that.
Yeah.
And I needed to bring in money, man.
Yeah.
You know, so I needed to go out and hustle, you know, and be a star, go out and be at the shows and,
right,
and
do right, it. Right.
That was my forte, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
And at the same time, you get to relax, and all you can do is just be, you know, be in the trade shows.
Yeah. Right. Right.
You know, because I did, you know, the first few years of the business, the first, I would say, 2003 to 2010, those 7 first years, I did everything, man. I did shipping, inventory.
Right.
You know, once I partnered up with these people little by little, I was able to, like, get away from all that and enjoy the other part of the business, which was the, you know.
The sales.
Traveling. Yeah. Yeah, talking to people.
Yeah.
Being a star, which is what I wanted to do when I was a kid, it's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like those guys, you know?
Because your name got you in the door, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to be those guys. And that was very enjoyable, man.
Right. Well, George, well, before we wrap this up, let's talk a little bit about, you know, you and I have had this discussion because I've had this Bodybuilding Legends show now for a couple years. And we've talked about how what's your thoughts on the state of where things are now or where they've gone the last, you know, let's say the last 20 years since the 90s in bodybuilding. Or it's 2020 now, so since 2000, I guess, you know, for the last 20 years.
Well, I can't go back 20 years. I can only go back a few weeks at best. I think I saw it coming, man. I think mid-90s, I'm not going to say immediately after Dorian Yates. I think Dorian Yates was like a tipping point. But I think more late 90s, I just didn't see the sport heading in the right direction, you know?
Yeah.
There was a few years there where I didn't pay attention to it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think bodybuilding, what we consider bodybuilding, I think that part of the sport is just gone. It's dead. There's nothing there anymore.
Yeah.
I think the new bodybuilding is the classic stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's okay. I think the classic, you know what? I'm glad it's not my first pick. I wish bodybuilding was still around at what we left it at in the 90s or 80s. But I'm glad it didn't just completely disappear and that physique was able to replace it.
That they brought in these other categories.
I don't care for all the other categories. I'm just glad the physique is there.
The classic physique, yeah.
Yeah, because if not, it wouldn't disappear, you know. And I think it all has to do with drugs. I think it's just way out of control, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's all out of control. I'm a businessman. I'm very yes and no type of thing. I think I've mellowed down, obviously, after I sold the business. But it's not hard to run these things. You got to have rules, you know. Like, hey, listen, man, you cannot weigh 297 pounds, period. That's it. Just set the rules, right. You know. When you get up there, you can't have glitter on your skin. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, earrings. You can't have bikinis that are a quarter of an inch thick.
Right.
You can't have pink bikinis. You can't have turquoise bikinis. You can't have, you know.
Right.
I think in all honesty, and I don't want to sound like an old man because I'm not an old man, but I think what the general public sees in Facebook, because it is what they see nowadays.
Yeah. You know?
I think it's laughable. Mm-hmm. I think because anybody could just grab a picture. See, before the magazines, right?
Right.
They would get a picture. They would take a picture of a bodybuilder on stage, of a lineup or a bodybuilder posing, and then they would look at 1,000 pictures, and they would pick the best picture out of 1,000, and they would put it in a magazine. So right. They were portraying the very best picture of that particular athlete. So what the public was seeing was an image that the magazine wanted you to see, so it was portrayed differently.
Okay.
You know, they wouldn't put you out there with your waist sticking out.
Right, right.
You understand? The magazine didn't dare to do that because it didn't want to sell you that.
Right.
So a magazine would get somebody that had a trim waist or that was breathing in. They would never put somebody breathing out.
Right.
See, I don't believe that. I don't believe this whole gut thing. I believe that what's happening is these guys are being captured with the wrong, you know, they're taking pictures and they're being captured breathing. That's it.
Okay.
When I was training, you know, I had a 27, 28 inch waist, 27 and a half on stage. But if you kept me breathing backstage, my gut would stick out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if you took a picture of me and put it out there, what's going to happen?
Your chest
is gut, right? Yeah. I think that's what's happening.
Hmm.
Especially in the gym when I used to put my belt at zero.
Yeah.
Now my gut is out here. Mm. I'm squatting. You know, I'm breathing.
Yeah.
You take a picture of me like that, that's what the public is seeing. So I think what's happening is the public, you have people in the audience that are taking pictures. They don't know what a good photograph is or not.
Yeah.
They don't look at it before they post it. They just put whatever picture they want
right,
up there.
Right, right, yeah.
Or they get Ronnie Coleman breathing out.
Yeah.
They put it out. Oh, look at Ronnie Coleman, 54 inch waist. No,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
it's just the wrong, you're portraying the wrong image.
Right.
So I think that completely ruined the sport.
Hmm, yeah.
I also think we're at a stage in our life where and I talked to you about this before, and I think some people would laugh at me, but I think men's bodybuilding, they need to go back to that old school bikini, like Arnold used to wear, Mike Mancer used to wear, you know, where it's thick on the side,
yeah.
You know, not that 1 inch, you know, a quarter inch thick. Why? It's too vulgar, man, for the public. You know, you put up, you know, you have a picture of Ty Green and Mr. Olympia, what's his name? The one who won 8 times now, 7 times?
Phil Heath,
you know, they're standing on stage and they have, you know, they have these little tiny bikinis and they're standing on stage and that's what the public sees.
Right.
And I don't think anybody wants to see that.
Right. Yeah, it's just the way it's portrayed.
Now, I'm guilty of wearing a small bikini when I was a kid. Because that's what I thought was appropriate at the time, right?
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of that. You could go back and you could look at me with the small bikinis and stuff. But I think that because all these pictures are being posted everywhere, I think these guys need to go back to that old school look.
Yeah. Because right? everybody likes that look.
Clean it up. Clean it up. It's not just that it looks better. It's just you need the sport is never going to get accepted by the general public.
Right.
But you need to do the best that you can with it. So clean it up a little bit. Go back to the menster look with those black bikinis. And you know what? No more fluorescent bikinis. No more glitter. Right. No more earrings. No more posing where you get to stand on your head.
Right.
It's
no more regulation.
Yeah, but put the rules, man.
Yeah.
You know, you break them, you're out. That's it. Put the rules.
Right.
And I don't think as a man or as a woman, you want to open up your Facebook feed or Twitter or Instagram and see these guys with these little tiny bikinis. It's very offensive. You know, I showed my I talked about it with my wife the other day, and she says it's offensive.
Yeah, yeah.
I tell you what, I was so ashamed of it for I love my industry. I can't live without it. But I was so ashamed of these bodybuilding shows that I never took my wife to one, believe it or not, 12 years that I was in the industry.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And one day, Sean Ray invites me to a show down here, and it was the Miami Beach Classic.
Okay.
And I'm sitting like in the front row, and I don't like to sit up close because I don't like to have somebody's booty on my face.
Right.
But they're mad. I don't want that, you know? I don't want that. So I go with my wife. And after 15 minutes of being there, the first thing that happens is this guy turns around and pulls his bikini up his butt. And the first thing that that I hear is my wife laughing. Right? Like laughing.
Right.
And now I'm embarrassed that I took my wife to the show and she's laughing at the sport that I so much love that is not being taken care of. Right?
Right.
And the first thing that comes out of her mouth is, I can't wait until I told my sister about this.
Oh, my God.
Now. Yeah. Not because it looked cute, but because of how dumb it
it's
was.
It's a joke, yeah.
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 Yeah, so she wants to tell her sister because she's making fun of it.
Yeah.
And her sister's going to laugh at it. And I'm like, I'm like insulted and embarrassed.
Right.
That I took my wife there and she's laughing at the sport that I've been a part of for 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I did an interview with Charles Gaines, the guy who wrote Pumping Iron. And Charles Gaines comes from the literary world. You know, he got into bodybuilding, but he's not a bodybuilder. He's a writer, you know, and he knows all these influential people. He knows all these artistic people. So he took Kurt Vonnegut and his wife to a show back in the 70s, and they saw Ed Corney pose. And Kurt Vonnegut, who's this famous author, was like blown away, like so impressed by watching Ed Corney pose. So there's an example of somebody who comes from the literary world, who knows nothing about bodybuilding at all, never seen a bodybuilding show, never seen a bodybuilder before, watches a bodybuilding contest, and when it's presented right, he's absolutely blown away by it, like so impressed by it. So I think that goes to show you like how good bodybuilding could be, the potential it has, compared to what some bodybuilders portray, like what you saw.
It's,
you know,
hard. It was an art form, man. It was an art form.
An art form.
That's why it started. It was an art form.
When it's portrayed right, even this guy from the literary world who knows nothing about the sport is able to appreciate it, you know?
Right. So now, check this out. So now I'm pissed because as a businessman, I felt insulted because had I taken my kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no sign anywhere that says rated R. You understand?
Right.
This is pornography now.
Right.
You understand?
Right.
This is like going to a strip club.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to show my kids none of that crap.
Right.
Right? Then I'm also insulted but lucky at the same time because I got the tickets for free. But had I paid $90 for those tickets to see this crap?
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, we gotta be careful of the way we present it, you know.
Yeah, it's like you're spitting in my face, you know. You're showing other.
Yeah, when I promoted like 15 shows in my career, and I always tried to make it. I always thought about the audience whenever I promoted a show, so I tried to bring in like special acts, or I would try to get like you know, older bodybuilders in the area to come in to be an inspiration, you know, have a guy up there who's 75 years old with abs, you know, I'd always think about the audience and think about how I'm going to present the show. And I think it gets hard for promoters now because they got so many divisions they got to do and they got to include them all. And the show just gets so long and it gets so boring. And remember when we used to go to shows when we were in the 80s, you know, you had people come out there do posing routines that were so inspiring and so entertaining, you know, yeah. And that's what we had to look forward to. Now there's so many events like, you know, figure, bikini, but they don't even pose. They just come out in men's physique. They just stand there, you know. So we've lost the art of bodybuilding to all these different divisions. Yeah. You know?
And you know what? Something too that is ironic and I feel bad for is it's a lot of these guys that got the pro cards. You know what does that even mean?
Yeah, there's so many of them.
It doesn't mean anything.
Right, kind of watered down.
I used to make fun of it when I had my company. I used to tell my graphic designer let's make a counterfeit NPC pro card and sell them on social media.
Yeah.
I bet you people would buy it.
But when you think about it, in the 80s, like how many guys that were really good never got their pro cards, you know? Roy Liedlmeyer, Matt Mendenhall, you know, some really great bodybuilders.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But
Well, George, thanks for joining us, man. It was great talking to you because I know you're an old school bodybuilder like me, and it was always good to hear your story. I didn't know about all the stories about you being so successful as a teenager, and of course, it was good learning also about your business. So it was great sitting down and talking with you.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. I love what you're doing. You know, getting, you know, giving back, and I love how you have all these older. It's old school bodybuilders in your show, and people need to learn this stuff. A lot of people don't know. They don't know. We don't have the magazines anymore.
Right. That's what I'm doing. I'm trying to preserve the history. And if I could talk to the people that were actually there, like the actual bodybuilders themselves, get their story,
man.
At least we can preserve those stories. Because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them are getting older and passing away. Like Ed Corney passed away last year. Franco, and, you know, I never got to interview those two guys, so I didn't get their story. So I'm trying to get as many of these guys as I can.
Yeah, definitely get all that stuff because I think a lot of these kids nowadays they see social media and they see somebody in there and they don't really appreciate it.
Right.
You know, where a magazine before had more impact. It meant you have done stuff.
Well, we always look forward to it, and we got excited when we got a new magazine and all that. You know.
But you know, being in a magazine.
Yeah.
Meant you were a star. You were exactly. Something. You were special. You were the best of the best.
Right.
Now, anybody could create a social media account and put half a million picture and become a star. And people think that's a star, and that's not really a star. A star is the one who puts the work.
Right. You're right. Yeah, you had to be a champion to be in a magazine back then.
Yeah, you had to be a champion. You had to win. Either you're a national show or your state show. Now anybody can be a champion. Anybody can have a pro card.
Anybody can create their own pro account, right? their own account, yeah.
I think that's going to be my next gig. I'm going to start creating fake pro cards.
Fake pro cards, right?
You won't know the difference.
All right, George. Well, thank you again for joining us, and hopefully we can have you back on the show again and we can talk some more bodybuilding.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. And before we go, I want to read this article called Mike Quinn, the Destroyer. This came out, let's see, I think it was the April 1990 issue of Muscular Development Magazine. And it was written by Gail Hall. All right, here we go. It says, top pro bodybuilder Mike Quinn is a guy with a story, an opinion, a problem, a future, and an ability to survive. And sometimes it comes down to just that, survival. He'll tell you the story. He'll give you his experience. Here's a piece of Mike Quinn. Go ahead and take it. He wants you to have it. I used drugs one more night. Then I had an hallucination. I saw my sister Kathleen lying on my bed. She told me to get help. I called my girlfriend Dana and I said, I think I'm in the middle of a nervous breakdown. You better get me to a hospital. They evaluated me, decided I wasn't crazy, and I was admitted. I completed their 30-day drug rehabilitation program. It cost me $20,000. Then I came out, and I had 8 weeks to prepare for the Olympia. Mike Quinn is a drug addict. Cocaine is his drug of choice, but he doesn't use it now. He's controlling his problem. But a problem it is. The nervous breakdown was a result of the death of his younger sister, Kathleen, for whom he had bonds and a closeness without which the combination of life became no more than an alternative. Kathleen shared Mike's problem. She was the first to enter a rehab program, and that may have exacerbated her problem beyond repair. We'll get to that. Even in death, Kathleen is Mike's life force, and it's an awful, powerful force. Mike comments, people take drugs for a reason. They want to suppress their feelings. I've done drugs since I was 12 years old because I didn't like the way I felt about myself. The addiction is something I was born with. It's genetic. Even though I've done drugs since I was a kid, I could always go into the gym and train like an animal the next day. I was so aggressive and I had so much drive. I had a monkey on my back, but I still wanted to be somebody. Mike Quinn placed sixth at the 88 Olympia and seventh in 89. No mean feat by any standards, but under the circumstances of having to play the hand he was dealt, it was an incredible accomplishment. Once I got out of the hospital, he said, I knew that if I didn't get right to it, there would be a chance that I would never compete again and the chance that I would never come out of my depression. And honestly, Kathleen loved it so much. The fact that her older brother was a famous bodybuilder. I just wanted her to know that I didn't quit. This was the hardest show I've ever prepared for in my life. There were days when I just cried all day long, or I was totally angry. There was no in between. I'm at the 6-month point now after her death. There are days when I'm between those two extremes, but the amount of anger I had while I was training was just so intense. I trained so hard. I just wanted her to know. After I got out of the hospital, I couldn't see people because I couldn't talk. I went to Florida and I stayed with my parents for 3 weeks, then to Scotland for the last 5 weeks before the contest. I had some friends there, but it was about the most isolated place I could think of. I stayed in an apartment by myself. I had a diet so hard. I weighed 242 when I got out of the hospital. I competed at 214 or 215. I didn't really have enough time to get my skin as thin as I wanted to. What did he think about his placement in the contest? I don't think I was the seventh place physique. I don't care what anybody says. They can say I wasn't the same person I was the last year, but I improved my legs and I put on more muscle. I think I should have been fifth. I don't think Rich Gaspari or Mike Christian should have beat me. I mean, not at all. In the beginning, Mike began training at 14. His dad got him into weights. Powerlifting came first. It was to be an aid to accomplish his first dream, which was playing pro football. He made All Scholastic in high school, and he was scouted by the pros during his freshman year of college. But football wasn't Mike's true calling. I was a little too introverted for football, he said. I was a real good player, but I wasn't the rah-rah type. I kept part of my intensity inside me. I was real quiet, kind of a psycho kid. There was a mysterious side to me. When I train, people see that other side. Then there were the shattered forearm, broken ankle, 3 concussions, and an arthritic condition in his 5th and 6th vertebrae because of the way he used to tackle people. He would spike them with his face. Finally, said Quinn, I decided I wanted to take a break from school, and I came home. I was really into the weights by this time, and I started training for a powerlifting contest. One day I went into the gym, and I had a squat something like 580 for a set of 5. I missed my first rep, hated it. I put the weight down, and I decided I'm going to be a bodybuilder. I was 18. Living in Boston, Mike entered and won his first contest, the Teenage Mr. Bay State, in December 1980. In 1981, he won the Teenage Mr. Massachusetts and the Teenage Mr. America. My dad trained me for those first 3 shows. I still train with him when I'm home. I had the mental approach of a power lifter, and I became a power bodybuilder. I would do real heavy weights for reps. That's how I train to this day. In 1982, Mike placed 2nd to Lee Haney at the Junior Nationals. In 84, he was 4th at the USA and 3rd at the AAU Mr. America. Joe Mico won. I should have won that show, no doubt about it. 2 weeks later, I won the NABBA Mr. Universe, and I destroyed him at that show. He placed 4th, said Mike. 1985 was a really bad year for me. As you know, I'm a drug addict. My addiction escalated in 85 when I moved to Florida. I was coming back into the MPC, and I placed out of the top 15 at the USA. In 86, I started all over again. I entered the Mr. Florida, and I won the heavyweight class and the overall. Then I placed 4th at the Nationals the year Gary Stridham won. At this point, Mike decided to move out to California. I felt I wasn't known enough. I wasn't getting enough publicity, he said. I was so close to becoming a pro. I was a freak when I was 20 years old. He's 28 now. People weren't ready for me then. I don't think I was ready for myself. I was a pretty frustrated kid at that point in my life. I'd been living in Boston, working security in nightclubs at night. I fought a lot, and I had a definite reputation as someone not to come around. Not that I was a bully or anything, it's just that if there was a problem, I was the kind of person who would stop it. I was quiet most of the time, and then people would see me in the gym. I was a lunatic in there. I trained like an animal. I wouldn't talk, so people thought I was a real ass. I had a definite mystique about me, but it hurt more than it helped. People confuse aggression and passion. I'm not really a lunatic. I'm just very passionate. When I moved to California, I trained for 8 months straight for the USA, which I won. Then I turned pro. 3 months before the USA, I met Dana, who I spent the last 3 years of my life with. She played a major role in the first 2 years of my pro career. It was nice. Mike broke up with Dana last year, but he still speaks highly of her. They still speak often and are working on their friendship, although Mike admits that he is still struggling with the concept of being close to somebody for fear of losing them. Starting out as a pro. In my first few pro shows, said Mike, I think I made the mistake of going after Haney, size-wise, and I still think I'm the only guy who can do that. I placed fourth at the Detroit Grand Prix 2 weeks after the USA. Then I was fortunate enough to be able to train with one of my idols, Robbie Robinson. I trained with him for the Pro LA, got fifth, and then the Pro World Championships, where I got fourth. I was too heavy for all those shows. It made me appear blocky in my waist. I really have to come in lean in my waist, so I have that super V taper. I carry a lot of muscle, but I get beat in the first round by a lot of guys who are more aesthetic. I really destroy people in the mandatory poses, but I'm so far behind from the first round that I can't catch up. I'm working on the structural flaws I have. I've stopped working traps, and I don't do overhead pressing movements. My arms and pecs were starting to overpower the caps of my delts. Now I'm just destroying my medial heads, the delts, trying to make them bigger, my traps smaller. I'm also trying to bring my obliques down, which means stop squatting. Squatting makes me wider in the waist. I've become a real thinking bodybuilder. Ever since the Kathleen died, it's killed a lot of the aggression in me. It's allowing me to focus more clearly. Mike Quinn feels more firmly on track toward a successful year than he ever has before. Of course, his sixth-place finish at the 88 Olympia was a mind-blower in the world of bodybuilding. It was fantastic, and not many thought he could pull it off. It set his career up quite nicely, thank you. Life was good, but sometimes good is bad. Last year, 88 at the Olympia, I was the lightest I'd ever been, Quinn said. I weighed in at 204 and I competed at 208. I was really, really drawn, but everybody said that was the best condition I'd ever been in. I agree, but I was feeling too unhealthy on stage. I had to play catch-up, getting my weight down for the show. 6 weeks before, I weighed 232, so I had to lose a lot of weight fast. I did, but it was too hard on my system. I think my perfect weight for competition is between 212 and 215. My popularity was at a high point, and I was getting magazine covers. Then I broke up with Dana. I think California wrecked me. I got caught up in the lifestyle. I guess I didn't handle the fame right. It just happens. You don't see yourself changing, but you are. And I did. So my career was making me pretty happy. Things were going really wonderfully, and that screwed up my relationship. It did some real damage. I guess I was kind of finding out who I really was. I was touring in April in Germany. I was just starting to make some substantial money, which I planned to invest, and that's when I heard the news that my little sister had died. She was 19. And that's the end of the article. It says, next month, the circumstances surrounding Kathleen's death, Mike's decision to remain among the living, more comments on the competition at the 89 Olympia, who helped him prepare for the show, the fight at the end of the Grand Prix Tour, and the immediate future. I talked the talk, and now I'm going to walk the walk. Interesting article with Mike Quinn from the April 1990 issue of Muscular Development Magazine. Maybe I'll read part two next week. All right, guys, that's it for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Again, thanks to Old School Labs. Thanks to Florida Alternative Medicine. Thank you to all our Patreon donors, all you guys that contribute money each month to the podcast. I really appreciate you guys. If you want to be a Patreon donor, go to the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for the Patreon link. And just click on that, and you can donate whatever you like per month. And I appreciate all you guys that do that. I really do. All right, that's it for the show. Stay safe out there. Try not to get infected. And we will see you guys next week on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Take care.